From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll talk with author Susan Neville.
I'll find out about the summer stock stage production of Shrek the Musical.
And I'll get a preview of the Cabaret's upcoming season. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Author Susan Neville is known for her creative nonfiction as well as her short stories. She won the Richard Sullivan Prize for short fiction for In the House of Blue Lights, while Invention of Flight earned Neville the Flannery O'Connor Award for short fiction. She is also a Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award winner and teaches at Butler University. Travis DiNicola recently sat down with her to chat about her work.
Susan, welcome to Art of the Matter.
Thank you, Travis.
Great to have you here. I've been looking forward to this chat for a while.
Thank you.
I'm going to start out by, I hope I don't embarrass you too much, but I do want to tell you something, and that is that a couple years ago when I first started working on the Indie Writes Books project that I published through Indie Reads and a collection of a whole bunch of different Indiana authors and writing about books and bookstores and writing and literacy and such. So I was brainstorming a lot with Barb Shoup from the Writers' Center and Dan Wakefield, the author, and my staff at the bookstore. And across the board, as we were talking about who do we want to include in this book, every single person said, we have to have Susan Neville.
Oh, that's very kind.
And then when the book came out, your story blew all the other authors away. I don't know if you know that as well, but
no.
I got so many notes from different authors saying, oh, the book looks great. I'm so happy to be a part of it. Susan's story is incredible.
Oh, thank you.
You wrote a story in that book that is in many ways kind of a writer's story. And it's based on James Joyce's short story, The Dead. Tell me a bit about that story, because it really is an incredible piece that you submitted.
Oh, thank you. It was based on The Dead. You feel odd saying that you based anything on a James Joyce story, which is pretty much impossible. But I've been reading and teaching for so long that it's almost impossible to write something that doesn't have echoes or homage in some way to some other writer. So the story began as something that really happened, which was one of our colleagues passed away. It was very sad. And he was beloved by everyone. And so we met together during a snowstorm at Binkley's restaurant and just kind of had an informal wake and just talked about him. And in the process, I just thought, oh, the history of Binkley's and the history of this place and of the drug industry in Indianapolis and how, you know, drugs are used to help, you know, cancer patients and how they don't work. And just they don't always work. They sometimes do or often do, but in this case didn't. The feeling of everyone kind of being there. And I started thinking about a group of people who gathered in a situation like that, but made them their disciplines. So the romanticist would kind of speak about things as a romanticist would. And a Victorian would speak about things as, or would see the world as
all,
a Victorian
would. All the characters
are
basically faculty members.
They were faculty members, but they, yes, they were faculty members because it was a group of faculty members gathering to
English
talk
department.
About someone. Exactly. But I can't, I don't think of the faculty members as the people who were there.
Yeah, sure.
So.
It was as I was reading, I grew up in an academic family and, you know, remember going to parties or dinners, whatever, with my parents sometimes where there were a lot of other professors there. And it sort of took me back to that experience.
Oh, yeah. It's a unique experience. It is.
But it's a great story.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for submitting that. You write both short stories as well as nonfiction. You write a lot about place.
Mm-hmm.
You write a lot about Indiana. And that's kind of a fascinating thing for me. I mean, as I'm leaving Indianapolis in
right.
the next 2 months or so.
And we're so sorry.
Well, thank you. I mean, Indiana's kind of flat. And so to write about landscape and such, it's an interesting thing that you have focused on and do in a way that goes so much beyond just that short description.
Yeah, I mean, Indiana, I have said this before, but the last thing I wanted to do was to live in Indiana when I graduated from college. I thought, I'm leaving now and I'll never be back. And when I came back, we lived in Newcastle, Indiana, and I was really, really interested. I started seeing the place much differently than I had before. And I also realized that, you know, this is my life. The history is really interesting and rich. Indiana is flat in the middle and top part of the state, but it's still incredibly interesting, and the flatness has a lot to do with agriculture. It's all kind of man-made. We think of it as very rural, but it's a very culturally made environment and landscape. So yeah, I've found stories ever since then, nonfiction and fiction, in the place itself.
In the land.
In the land.
Recently, I was talking with a landscape painter and talking about, you know, painting landscapes in Indiana. And it's actually an interesting thing is that we have such a strong community of plein air painters, of people who paint the landscape outside. And, you know, and in some ways, maybe more so than almost any other region. And again, it sort of goes back to, you know, and they joke about, people always ask them, but what is there to paint? And
so,
when you start really paying attention and noticing and seeing that there really is so much that gathers people's interest when you do pay attention to it here and that affects our lives.
It's just such a, I mean, honestly, I keep talking about the history, but it's just such a strange history because of, you know, the kind of Germans coming across and the Scotch-Irish coming up through the South and, you know, all the different people who settled in the northern part of the state where you've got this incredible landscape of the dunes and so many people. I mean, the father of ecology was at the University of Chicago trying to save the dunes at the same time that U.S. Steel was buying up the land and building the world's largest steel mill. So it's just filled with a lot of interesting conflict. I can understand why plein air painters would want to paint this landscape, too, because there's always like something, there's always a kind of sadness about, you know, things leaving or kind of nostalgia. But there's also, I lived in Florida for a year and we moved back to Indiana from Florida. And I really noticed the colors.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always thought this was a gray state. But, you know, suddenly it was like, oh, yeah, there's a green gray. There's a lavendery gray. And it was just a lot. It was interesting, and I figure that,
Have you always been sort of interested in that combination of both land and history?
No. No. I don't know. I haven't been, I have to say. I was an indoor girl when I was growing up.
Yeah.
I don't particularly like walking in the woods. I don't like being surprised by grasshoppers coming up from weeds and things like that. But the more, and maybe that's why, maybe because I realize, oh my God, this is a very strange place. There are all these sinkholes in southern Indiana and, you know, lost rivers and then the dunes in the north. And I've always been interested in industrial spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, always, I wasn't as a child, but yeah, maybe. I loved going on factory tours and things in high school. So yeah, so that conflict between the industrial spaces and the, you know, kind of green spaces was interesting to me. And I think it was really important to me when I was in my 20s and I just moved back here to read Wendell Berry, the poet, farmer, philosopher in Kentucky. And I realized that his ideas and work has had really a great effect on me when I first started writing about Indiana.
Did you always want to be a writer?
I did.
You did?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
I did.
So tell me a little bit about your history as a writer.
There's always the childhood history of writing bad novels. and I was always writing a bad novel. But I was writing stories about Indiana, and those stories went into a collection and won the Flannery O'Connor Award when I was in my 20s. And so that was very exciting. And then I got kind of stuck because I thought I just can't be in my room making up characters. There just isn't enough here in these four walls. So that's when I kind of went back to my interest in journalism from college.
Yeah.
And I just started going out into the country. That's where I could go. I would go to towns. I'd interview people. And all of the kind of, skills that I had learned about writing fiction, I just absolutely brought to nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
So description, dialogue, and now that's called creative nonfiction.
Right.
At the time, nobody knew what to call it. So I would send pieces to magazines and somebody would say, oh, this is really great, but we don't publish essays. So I'd say, sure, that's fine. Call it a story. And, now it's so much easier in some ways to publish creative nonfiction that I have had the opposite thing happen, So it's like, oh, we don't publish stories. So could we call this creative nonfiction? And it's, oh, sure, whatever,
sure,
whatever you want to call it. It's just I do what I do and don't think about what genre it falls into until someone asks, is this a story or not? Lou Harry asked that about the piece that was in the Indy Rights book. It's like, I was so excited to figure out at the end whether this was a story or an essay.
Uh-huh.
And it was, to me, clearly a story because I made up characters and I allowed myself to lie, which I don't do in nonfiction. So
you've been teaching at Butler now for how long?
Oh, 33 years.
Goodness.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So does teaching writing affect your own writing?
I would say that it does. I would say that teaching creative writing makes you a better close reader, which affects my reading, and my reading really affects my writing. So having taught for 33 years, it remains an education to me. I'm always learning something new from my students. I try to never teach the same books twice. And so it's been just like a continuing graduate program for me. I learn from other writers. It has been good. At first, I thought it was going to really be awful because you're reading student work all the time. and student work can be thrilling and exciting, and it can take all the energy that you would put into your own work because you have to get inside that student's story and you have to understand how it's not working as though you were writing it yourself without being prescriptive. Yeah, without telling them how to write it. So it's like sometimes very, very difficult. And also you realize that the old chestnuts that you learned yourself in graduate school, you just don't believe sometimes. It's taken me a long time to understand this is probably not going to be very interesting to most people listening to this, but point of view is like really fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things I would say for the first few years I started teaching is, oh, this is a point of view shift, point of view shift. And then all of a sudden I realized it was because all the stories that we read during the 90s or the 80s were all close third person.
Right.
So, because it's like all the characters were just so introverted and internal. So you couldn't shift away from that character because that's the way we saw human beings. And in the last few years, it's like point of view shifts don't bother me at all. I love them because it's all of a sudden, oh, yeah, there is a way of getting into the interior of many different people in groups and communities. And so, yeah. So you learn a lot. I like teaching. It's a great thing. I highly recommend it.
So what's a recent book that you've taught or are planning on using to teach from that really stands out as something?
Okay, I teach a lot of poetry. I taught Claudia Rankine's Citizen last year, and it was a great book to use, particularly in a class of freshmen. Again, it has to do with point of view because she talks about racial microaggressions and uses second person. So it's like you walk into the store, you do this. And so it was a great way to have my students do pieces about their own lives or the lives of someone that they just imagined, you know, like they were in a situation and they were the one who was hurting someone else rather than the one being hurt. So they moved into one another's heads by writing their own very short pieces in second person the way Claudia Rankine did. So that was really successful. Last year we read Leila Lalami's The Moor's Account, and I loved teaching that book. It was a really great book. Jonathan Franzen's The Corrections and Zadie Smith's On Beauty.
Sure.
I taught one semester about 3 years ago, I guess, and they were great because they're at sentence level and paragraph level and at structural levels, just such great writers.
Susan, it is a delight to chat with you. I wish we had more time.
I do, too.
Thank you so much for coming into Art of the Matter today.
Thank you very much.
Travis DiNicola with author Susan Neville. You can learn more about her at her website, susan-neville.com, SusanNeville.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Housed at Park Tudor School, Summer Stock Stage brings together musical theater students from all around central Indiana to collaborate with adult theater professionals in two summer productions each year. Sharon Gamble invited artistic director and founder Emily Restine Holloway and John Collins, star of Shrek the Musical, to tell her about why Summer Stock Stage exists and what it's like to play a strange green guy.
Emily, I'm going to ask you to remind us of the mission of Summer Stock Stage and how you came to create it and why.
Okay, this is our 13th season already. Summer Stock Stage is a nonprofit summer theater program for performers 13 to 19. And our mission is to enrich our community through theater by inspiring young people to learn, connect, and perform. So we provide a professional, positive theater experience. This summer we have students from 40 different middle, mostly high schools from throughout central Indiana, kids coming from Crawfordsville and Avon, Columbus, really driving quite a ways to be a part of our program. And we put on two full-length musicals with a professional staff.
And how do the students find out about Summer Stock Stage?
We have a website, summerstockstage.com, which is how you can buy tickets, find out about auditions, everything. But a lot of it, quite frankly, is word of mouth. Since we have so many schools involved, students who have a high interest in the performing arts find out from other students at their schools. And we also send information to all the teachers at different schools throughout the central Indiana area.
And John, since we have a student right here in the studio, I'm going to ask you, how did you first learn about Summer Stock Stage? Did you have older siblings or friends who were in it before?
Well, my older sister had a friend, Aaron Huey, who was in Chorus Line. And my family went and saw it, and they said I was too young to see it at the time. But they came
back. You talked him into it.
Well,
they didn't let me see it.
I was so upset. But they came back, and my mom's like, this is a really, like, amazing program. And I grew up in a musical theater family, so she said, this is something you should try to do. And it was mostly just, I heard it from other people, how great of a program it was.
And then you auditioned the next season.
Yeah.
Cool. What do you mean you grew up in a musical theater family? Your parents also
love music? My mom minored in theater. She's been doing theater since she was a kid, and my dad, he's been involved with theater. We listen to cast albums all the time, sometimes when I don't want to, but we still listen to it. And yeah, it's just the life I've grew up in. It was pretty great.
And how many siblings do you have?
I have two. I have an older sister and a younger sister.
Uh-huh. The younger sister also a theater person?
Yeah, she's in Shrek, too.
Sounds like she can't avoid being with your family.
Yeah, we're all tied into it.
So what is it? Obviously, you've grown up in the environment, and it sounds like you got the chromosome passed along too as well. But what do you like about musical theater? Why do that?
I just, especially with musical theater, the element of song and dance, I think it's such a heightened sense of reality in a way that you can express like emotions in a way that you can't always do with just straight theater or like movies. And I just think it's so cool to be able to tell a story in that kind of way.
Is it easier to get into character in a musical than it is in a straight play?
It depends. I mean, I do play. I've done plays at my school, and I think it just depends on the character. But I think when you hear the songs and you start seeing them, I think it really allows you to connect to the character more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Emily, I know that most of the students from these more than 40 schools probably are involved in theater at their own schools. What in particular did you want to accomplish by bringing students from widely different areas and both geographic and school environments together?
Well, it's interesting for me to hear that John's family wouldn't let him come and see that first show. and some of that is a little bit what we're trying to do, we're trying to do shows for really highly interested kids. We don't say highly talented kids because mm-hmm. we believe at that formative age between 13 and 19, kids are growing and changing so much that it's really about their interest and their passion. And if they're connected to this, then like I have seen kids totally transform themselves as far as becoming an actor, a singer, a dancer in those years. But we're trying to do shows that they wouldn't have a chance to do in their high schools, that are going to be things that are interesting to them as young artists and young performers, but that are going to be a little bit more, a little bit edgier, a little bit more challenging. Mm-hmm. So that's essentially what we're doing. And what we're oftentimes doing is pulling those one or two kids from their high schools who are sort of the leads in their high school musical and creating like an all-star team mm-hmm. For very highly interested students. Mm-hmm. And what has come from that is a young artist's community. Like they are all so connected, and it's fun to see them on social media visiting each other during the school year and supporting each other at their schools or at their other musicals or performances outside of school as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic because of course, we live in a digital world, so people can and do connect with people on the mm-hmm. other side of the globe. But high schools still tend to be fairly local geographically. People, you know, you form friendships in your own school and you support kids in your own school. But this is a way to really broaden that community.
And it's interesting, too, still in this day that I was lucky enough to go. I actually went to high school at Park Tudor where this event takes place. Mm-hmm. And they've so generously donated their space to our not-for-profit for almost 15 years now, and it was cool in my school to be a part of theater and the arts, but that's not the case for all these young performers.
Right.
And so for a lot of them, this is their first chance to be a part of a community that's really proud and accepting of their gifts and their talents. So that can be really transformative for a young person.
And that speaks their language. They find
Absolutely.
Other kids who are part of that same
They find their people
tribe.
There.
Yeah, exactly. And the program's been around long enough. Oh, dear, I just did the math in my head. You have alums who are in their 30s.
And they're on Broadway.
That's amazing.
It's so fun, like, just to go to, and some of them are touring. I got to see an alum play the lead in Newsies that came through just a couple months ago. And you know, it's fantastic to see what so many of them are doing mm-hmm. in the arts and not in the arts. People who have taken other life skills and grown them. So
sure.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Sure, John, is this your first year to be part of Summerstock
No,
stage?
This is my fourth year.
Fourth year, yeah. Okay. And what shows have you done in the past?
My first year was Little Mermaid, and the next year I did Hair, which was so fun. And last year I did 25th annual Putnam County Spelling
Bee. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which was super fun. And Mary Poppins.
So you're an old hand at this.
Yeah,
and
I guess.
You probably, when you showed up for auditions, you're like, oh, I remember you. I remember I know you.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have students who come back 4, 5, 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once they start coming, it's sort of unusual for us to lose somebody who it's a pretty dedicated group of performers.
Yeah, it's a great sense of community that we have at Summerstock.
Absolutely. So what attracted you to want to play Shrek?
Well, I never saw myself playing Shrek. When I went to auditions, I saw the, because they have the show on Netflix and I watched it on Netflix and the music is so great. And I was like, I'll just go whatever part. And when I heard that I was going to be playing Shrek, I was like, okay. Like, and the more I've been reading the script and going over the songs and memorizing lines, I'm like, it's such a great character. 'Cause in the movie, it doesn't explore as much of, I think, is his internal feelings as it does in the musical, and I think that's a really great thing to explore, so that's really fun to play.
So tell us a little bit more about that. I can't imagine that we have very many listeners who haven't seen the film, but just tell us kind of the general outline of the story of Shrek. Who is he?
So Shrek is an ogre who is hated by most of the world, and he...
Just for being an ogre,
yeah. Just
Sharon.
For being an ogre,
right.
Yeah.
They don't
so
know
a lot
him.
Of
misunderstanding.
Yeah.
They don't know
there
him.
Is. Right. There really is, and all these fairy tale creatures get dumped on his swamp, and he's really unhappy about it
because he likes his swamp. The
he
way
likes
it
his
is.
Swamp. He likes his isolation.
He's
yeah.
kind of learned to be a hermit.
Yes, yeah, he has. And this donkey and him, they go to this interesting man called Lord Farquaad, and. They are given a task to save a princess from a tower guarded by a dragon and then to get his swamp back. And it's just about his journey with this donkey and this princess and the friendships that they make and the
and
lessons they learn.
That's a lot about his self-worth, too.
Yeah.
Like him figuring out that he deserves love just like everybody else.
Yeah.
So in that regard, it's really a perfect show for... people of any age, but in particular 13 to 19-year-olds, just saying.
It's such a great show for that. And it has the fairy tale characters, so it's great for young audiences. But there are such clever inside jokes.
Yeah,
funny. And the thing that's really great and why we chose it at Summerstock is it has so many opportunities for solos and lead characters.
Mm-hmm.
Pinocchio, Peter Pan, the Three Pigs, the Ugly Duckling, the Shoemaker's Elf, the Gingerbread Man, like all of those characters have great solo singing opportunities, and it's a huge ensemble show.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it is Shrek and Shrek is the main character, the supporting cast is really great and important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You get to lift up all of your colleagues.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
I should note for our listeners, we're having this conversation very early in the process.
Mm-hmm.
So your answer might change if I were to ask you right before opening night. But do you have a favorite scene or a favorite song?
Well, there's a lot of funny scenes in the show. I think that's really great. But there's also some really, like, personal, you know, really heartfelt moments. And I think the song That's Who I'd Be, is it's him after they rescued the princess and him, like, imagining who he'd be if he wasn't an ogre. And I think it's just a really beautiful song. And it brings in other characters from the show. And I think it really shows that everyone is struggling with who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just a really beautiful message and scene to play out.
So I have to ask you about that. A lot of people who go into theater are the lonely onlys in their family. Everybody else is like a sports geek or, you know, something else. But you came... It sounds like you've come up in a very supportive family.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have trouble trying to imagine what it's like to be an outsider?
Oh, I mean, yeah. The school I went to in middle school, it's a great school. It was a really sports-driven school.
Uh-huh.
And, I tried almost every single sport under the sun and I failed miserably at most of them. and a lot of the friends I made at that school, they... we're all into sports, and I was in the theater, and I always felt kind of like an outcast at that. So when I was able to do Summerstock and got into more theater, I really felt like I came to realize who I am and, like, this is who I'm comfortable with. So I definitely have, like, known what it's like to be an outsider, but I've also been graced to know what it's be like to be part of a community that's accepting.
If you needed somebody to verify, to ratify your mission, I think you just said it.
Yeah. I know. I see it every day. It's so great.
Yeah, it's great.
Sharon Gamble with Summer Stock Stage Artistic Director and Founder Emily Rasteen Holloway and John Collins, star of Shrek the Musical. You can see John and his castmates in Shrek at Park Tudor School July 20th through the 24th. Learn lots more at summerstockstage.com. Again, summerstockstage.com.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Do I see a bottle of French wine over there behind you?
Half empty or half full?
Well, with luck, it's half full, so we can pour a glass and celebrate
Bastille Day. That's right.
And if you're joining us on Thursday night, I hope you two are consuming something French, if nothing else, some nice frites.
Ooh la la.
Ooh la la. I don't think I have a single French item on our calendar, but we're still going to give you some arts events on our calendar that we call
What'll We Do? Savory.
C'est vrai.
Hey, the East 10th United Methodist Church is going to have an August 5th First Friday event called Radial Point, and it is an art event that also is based sort of around a narrative that looks at the church's past and present and future on the Near East Side of Indianapolis. It's a 1911 building, and it's really cool in the corner of 10th and Keystone, and it's just going to be a really interesting show. Two of the participants that did a part of this were given canvases and brushes and stuff to basically sort of paint about their neighborhood and then bring it back. And so it's a real community effort that's bringing it together. And local illustrator Yingo De La Rosa is also doing a workshop that's part of that as well. You can find out more information on Facebook if you look for East 10th United Methodist Church.
Fantastic.
Or Radial Point.
Radial Point. Love it. Hey, next Thursday, the 21st, at lunchtime, you can grab your brown bag lunch and go to Hilbert Circle Theater to catch the music of Billy Joel and Elton John performed by Michael Cavanaugh. This is part of the ISO's lunchtime series, lunch break series. You can bring your lunch and pick any seat for a 40-minute performance. Tickets just $5. And, you know, there's something wrong with you if you don't know and love at least two or three Billy Joel songs. That's all I'm going to say.
So true. Hey, you know, Sharon, a couple weeks ago I was out in Wabash, Indiana, part of their Arts Fest.
You were.
And it was a great experience out there with Renan Meyer and meeting a lot of other people. And they're doing some really, really interesting things there. And I met a woman when I was out there. Susan Jones, who has written a musical called Light Up the Town, and it's a musical celebrating Wabash as the first electrically lighted city.
I've read about this.
Yeah, and they are going to be performing that in the Ford Theater in the Honeywell Center in Wabash in August, the 12th and 13th and 14th, and it's part of the Wabash, Indiana Bicentennial Celebration. And so I'll give reminders about this as we get closer to it, but if you're looking at maybe some interesting one-day trips in Indiana, I think checking out this musical in Wabash might be a great one to think about for August.
I love it. Hey, on July 23rd from 10 to 5, step into the West at the Eitelsjord Museum for their West Fest, a family event featuring entertainers, animals, food, and family fun. Tickets are included with the museum admission, and it's just a way to, in a very casual way, expose especially younger people to some of the glorious art that's housed at the Eitelsjord. West Fest, July 23rd, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
So author Ben Winters, we can still claim him as local, even though he has moved to Los Angeles.
Wah,
we miss Ben. Great guy, but lived in Indiana for a while, and his newest book, Underground Airlines, just came out last week, and it has been receiving incredible reviews, including a great one I heard on Fresh Air last week. But all the reviewers are saying this is a book to check out. It's basically based around the idea that the Civil War never happened, and slavery still exists in a few states in the United States. So it's kind of an alternate history book. Really interesting, a great read. This is Ben Winters, and I just happen to know that Indie Reads Books has some copies.
Yeah.
Ben is not going to be in town right now, but he is going to be coming in October for an author event then.
Great. Mm-hmm. Great. Hey, Acid Dolphin Experiment. It's kind of a crazy title, but let me tell you about this new play.
Tell me that title again.
Acid Dolphin Experiment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that name.
I know. Tom Horan, playwright in residence at the Phoenix Theater, has been working on this for a couple of years. And what it is a theatrical production based on the life of John C. Lilly, who was a neuroscientist, no relation to the Lillies of the Eli Lilly family, mind you. He used isolation tanks and dolphins and psychedelic drugs to break barriers and do all kinds of experimentation about consciousness. And I don't think I want to tell you too much more because just go and be amazed. This production is on stage right now at the Phoenix Theater and runs through August 14th. And again, it's called Acid Dolphin Experiment. Tom Horan is the playwright.
And this is the last week for Hand of God, I believe, at Phoenix.
It is.
And boy, I've been hearing great things about that show. I'm hoping to still be able to get a chance to get to it. So, hey, also speaking of some theater taking place at the Indie Fringe Theater, not the Indie Fringe, the festival comes up in August, and we'll be talking more about that soon, but at the Indie Fringe Theater on July 22nd through the 30th, local playwrights Matthew McDonald and Michael Moldoni are premiering their rambunctious new works in a double bill at the Fringe. They're both Carmel High School alumni, and the first show is Moldoni's Saddle Broncos, a play about irascible, desperate characters exchanging rage in a pub. And the second is McDonald's Indiana Vices, which tells the story of a heist, a kidnapping, a surrogate pregnancy, and a lot more. So it should be an interesting evening. So again, that will be, they're going under the name The Brute Condor Players. And that will be a double bill at the Indie Fringe starting July 22nd.
Okay. So, you know how you can, with certain trendy names, you can kind of tell how old somebody is based on his or her name?
Yeah.
Back in the 1980s.
Like Ethel.
Like Ethel.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the 1980s, you could not swing a cheerleader without hitting somebody called Heather. Please don't swing cheerleaders. That's not a very safe practice. But Heather's, a 1988 cult film, also a dark comedy, has been made.
One of the few films to feature croquet.
I did not know that.
Oh,
well,
yes.
There we go. Oh. You would know. Heather's has been made into a musical by part of the team that brought you Bat Boy, the musical, so you know it's going to be dark and twisty. It's the story of Veronica Sawyer, who's a brainy teenage misfit who hustles her way into the most powerful and ruthless clique, Westburg High School. They're called the Heather's. I don't have to explain why. It's a lot of fun, but it actually tackles some issues that are unfortunately still issues that teenagers have to grapple with. So you might want to check that out and maybe see it with your teenage kid. Heather's, where is it? It's on the stage at Theater on the Square. Learn more at tots.org.
Cool. Hey, Sharon, last thing I've got, in case you've seen a lot of people walking around town with top hats and magic wands, or maybe just things have been disappearing lately, it's because the Society of American Magicians is having their convention here in Indy right now. And
it's not Gen Con early. Don't worry.
No. But so 400 of the world's best magicians are gathering here at the Marriott downtown and the convention center. And one of the things that they're doing that is open to the public, which is very cool, they're doing six professional shows presented in what they're calling the Houdini Theater at the second floor of the Indianapolis Marriott downtown. That's
wow.
The Marriott, not the JW, the other Marriott. And tickets are available to the public for each show. It's open seating and really neat mix of different shows featuring up-and-coming magicians, a vaudeville type of show, some real classic acts. Anyway, if you do a search on indiefringe.org, because they're helping to sponsor it, you can get more information on this.
And before one of their magic wands makes us disappear, we'd like to remind you that you can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide, or just tune in next week and listen to our calendar that we call
What Do We Do? Au revoir.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The Cabaret at the Columbia Club continues to bring some of the top cabaret, jazz, and musical theater stars to its intimate venue downtown. Travis DiNicola spoke with the Cabaret's director, Shannon Forsell, about their upcoming season.
Shannon, welcome back. Great to see you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you. So, your next season for the Cabaret. What season is this? Season seven?
We are in, you know, we do a year-long, so we're a little bit different than season. So we're in our seventh year.
This is our
summer-fall season. So we do two seasons, essentially.
That's right on the number.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
And congratulations on that. That's
great.
Thank you. So seventh year, this is your upcoming summer-fall season. Cabaret located at the Columbia Club, gorgeous space where you have performances up there. And you've just brought in some amazing talent over the past few years. Huge, huge Broadway names, jazz singers. What do you got coming up for us next? I'm always looking forward to finding out.
We've got some great stuff coming up. We've got a lot of different variety. What we try to do is bring a wide variety of folks, not just Broadway, not mm-hmm. just jazz, you know, but a lot of different styles of intimate performance, mm-hmm. you know, that creates cabaret. And I do want to say, too, before we start, there's still a lot of confusion that you have to be a member of the Columbia Club
right.
to come to the
right.
club.
Always good to clarify that.
Yeah, so
you do not have to be
a member. All are welcome at mm-hmm. the Cabaret. So you call the Cabaret and everyone can come. They're all
get
our
tickets,
guests that
and
night.
There's food and drinks and all that sort of stuff. And
absolutely.
Yeah, open to everybody. And did I say the space was beautiful? Because it is. I mean,
it's super beautiful.
It's absolutely gorgeous. What, it's the Cole Porter Room, right? Or is that the name of the room? I'm just making that part up.
It's called the Crystal Terrace, but actually Hoagie Carmichael played in that room.
There we go.
That's where he played.
Okay.
And
great
so his
piano,
piano
great
yeah.
stage, gorgeous architecture, amazing window looking out on the monument.
It totally reminds you of an old-time supper club vibe of the mm-hmm. 1930s. And so it's super. It's swanky, but it's approachable. I don't want people to feel like they, you know, can't be themselves and that it's really unapproachable because it's a really approachable
but it's
space.
Swanky.
It's a good swanky in a good way.
It's a
yeah.
good, you know, dress up, get pretty. And
yeah.
I'm just going to call it the Cole Porter Room because I think it should be.
I think Cole Porter Room's great.
Okay, so who do you have coming to the Cabaret?
So the first person we have is an unexpected off-the-wall person who just finished her show at Cafe Carlyle. She just did her one-woman show.
And that's in New York, Cafe Carlyle.
And we try to kind of pattern our room out of great cabaret rooms like Cafe Carlyle mm-hmm. in New York. And that is Rumor Willis.
Hmm.
So people will know Rumor Willis by her very famous parents.
Yes, Bruce Willis.
Bruce and Demi, mm-hmm. yep. But she also won Dancing with the Stars.
Mm-hmm.
But she is an amazing singer. She kind of has an Adele kind of voice.
Okay.
And she was Roxy on Broadway in Chicago.
Oh,
so
fun.
she is a singer. She can't, you know, she's a singer and she's a great performer and she's got a little edge to her and a little Bruce Willis swagger to
mm-hmm.
her. So she does Broadway and some Great American Songbook and some edgy pop mixed in. And so it got great reviews in the New York Times. And so we're looking forward to having Rumor come.
Cool.
And that's, she opens our summer fall season and that's July 22nd and 23rd.
Okay.
Yeah.
So coming up fairly soon.
Coming up,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And then after that, a little bit something different, we have Cabaret's kind of golden couple. And they're also kind of famous for their work at the Cafe Carlyle in New York. And that's John Pizzarelli and his wife, Jessica Mulaski.
Okay.
John Pizzarelli, a lot of folks will also know him because he's a famous jazz guitar player and singer.
Mm-hmm.
But he is married to Jessica Mulaski, who is a performer. And some folks will know her. She's been in like 6 or 7 Broadway shows. I know her because she's the original singer of Jason Robert Brown's Stars and the Moon, which is a really fantastic version of that song. But they're going to be coming as a couple, and their show is called Grown Up Songs. And you know, and she's been in Les Miserables, City of Angels, Chess, Cats, Oklahoma, so she's no slouch.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he's a big star in the jazz scene.
Now, will he be playing guitar as part of that show?
He will be playing guitar, and he will be singing. He sings also. He does it all. And then they'll be doing songs together as well. And he will have his trio with him, too, his jazz trio. So,
oh, cool. Nice.
Yeah, so that's a really great night. And then for our Jazz at the Cabaret series, which is our Morris Machine Company Jazz at the Cabaret series.
Mm-hmm.
We're bringing in Dee Dee Bridgewater in
August.
Wow. Yeah, we're really excited about her.
She's such a superstar.
So she's coming in on August 19th,
mm-hmm.
Jazz Diva, and she's got a group coming with her. And also in August, this sort of makes me feel old, it's the 20th anniversary of the Broadway musical Rent.
Wow.
Yeah. Can you believe that? I can't believe that it's been 20 years.
Yeah.
But Adam Pascal and Anthony Rapp, who were the two original stars of that and have gone on to be in numerous Broadway shows since, have decided to team together to do a show just this year together that celebrates how they met each other and became friends through Rent, and so and also that will celebrate Rent.
So they'll be doing songs from Rent?
So they'll be doing songs from Rent and then songs from their own solo careers,
wow,
too.
That's great.
So some stuff together and stuff apart. And that's in August.
And since it's such a small, intimate venue, they won't have to wear those funky microphones around
their heads. The big Madonna microphones.
Right, right.
I call them the Madonna microphones because it seems like that she, you know, that came out with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nope. They'll be right up close and personal.
Uh-huh.
So those are our kind of our summer folks. And in the end of September, we are partnering with Indie Jazz Fest. We like to partner with them on that great festival. And the person we're going to be having as a part of Jazz Fest, his name is Alan Harris.
Okay.
And he is an amazing jazz singer and guitar player. And Tony Bennett named him as his favorite singer of all time.
Well.
And so Tony Bennett, I'm going to listen to Tony Bennett on
that
one.
Yeah, I'll take his advice.
He's an amazing, amazing performer. And one thing that's important for folks to know, because all of our shows are so, so different, that every experience is different depending on the performer, that if you go on our website, thecabaret.org, then we have video footage of all the performers. So you go on
so
and you
preview
can
preview it, check it out.
Yeah, you can check it out and say, is this my kind of thing?
Yeah.
Is this what I'm going to like? And then you can see them perform. You can see their bios. You can see pictures of them and kind of really kind of get a feel for, is this something I'm going to be into this night? And so then after that, we have the super hunky Broadway star, Aaron Lazar. And he's very, very attractive. And so you won't know this on radio, so you will have to go to the website to check that out and see pictures of him. So it's worth seeing it just to see
just
him.
To check
I mean,
out.
I'm just saying that personally. But he also is a Broadway star and has done things, you know, of note. He was in Mamma Mia. He was in Les Miserables. He was in Light in the Piazza. And so, and I think he's been in like 11 Broadway shows.
Okay.
So we call him Broadway's Hunky Heartthrob, and that's September 30th. And in October, we're bringing Broadway's favorite quirky Broadway star, Faith Prince, is going to be joining us October 20th and 21st. And she actually is already sold out. So if you you call to get tickets, get on the waiting list because we're adding shows. And that's something.
Yeah, because you usually do multiple shows.
We do multiple shows. And so if the show is sold out, please get on the waiting list because it means that we will look at trying to add a show.
Yeah, if you get enough people on the waiting list, then sure.
Yeah. So don't give up. But if you want to see Faith Prince, get on that waiting list, and we'll get you in to see her. Right after that is another jazz jazz series, the Morris Jazz series, is October 28th and 29th with a young kind of up-and-coming hipster jazz singer, Haley Loren, and she is really fantastic. And then the one that we're excited about, these two last powerhouse gals.
Yeah.
So our fundraising gala, which is November 18th, and folks need to get their tickets right away if they want to see this, is Renee Elise Goldsberry, who just won the Tony for a little show called Hamilton.
Yeah.
So, she just won the Tony. Yeah, we are really excited about getting her. And so she is performing for the gala.
So
November
18th. Just going to actually start teasing, like, okay, you're bringing in some great names. This is pretty cool. But anyone from Hamilton?
Yes, we have someone from Hamilton. Mm-hmm. So we're very excited about that. So, but again, those tickets, there are very few seats left to see her. Even though it's in November, we're really excited about her. And then we're going to close out the season with Ms. Megan Hilty at the end of November. We've had her come to Indianapolis before, and she is completing right now a holiday album.
Okay.
And so they called us and said, hey, can we bring our holiday show? And we said, of course. What are we going to say? Yes, of course. Come. When can you come? So at the end of November, right after Thanksgiving, we'll be bringing Megan Hilty at the holidays. And so we're going to end that with a bang. And
that's so cool.
Yeah.
How do you get such great talent?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, it's we try to study.
These are all big names. I mean, you know, who are doing regular shows in New York and such, and they're it's impressive.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well, what's great about it is, you know, now that we've been around long enough to really kind of have a world-class reputation, mm-hmm. a lot of folks call us, which mm-hmm. is really exciting. I can't tell you how exciting it is, because the first year we were just begging people. We promise, will you come to Indianapolis to this little cabaret, you know? Mm-hmm. And now folks call us and say, hey, we have a new show and we'd like to bring it to Indianapolis. And so the more we have, the more people will say, will go and tell their performer friends, you got to perform at this place. It's great.
I'm sure the performers love it because it is so intimate.
They love it, and they've really said that it's one of the best cabaret rooms in the country. And because truly there's not that many mm-hmm. cabarets even in the country. So for us to have that, we're already lucky. So we try to, you know, reach out to folks, and some mm-hmm. folks reach out to us. And we've been very, very lucky to be able to bring these folks here.
Gorgeous space and great acoustics, too. And
very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah. And the audiences have really loved it, and we love them. And it's nice out. It's a nice night out because you can eat, or you can have a drink, mm-hmm. or you can have dessert, and you sit at tables and chairs instead of kind of theater style. So yeah. it's kind of a cross between a theater experience and a nightclub experience.
Right.
But you don't have to be 21 to come. But yeah, so it's just a great way to spend an evening.
Excellent. Sounds like a great lineup for your upcoming season, Shannon. Thank you so much for coming in. It's always great to see you.
Thank you so much.
Travis DiNicolo with the Cabaret's Shannon Forsell. You can get the complete schedule for the Cabaret's upcoming shows at thecabaret.org, thecabaret.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll get a preview of the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra's upcoming season.
I'll find out about the Heartland Actors Repertory Theater's summer production of A Winter's Tale.
And I'll talk with Chris Forhan about his new memoir. Plus, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.